First of all, I'd like to thank all the people that helped collaborating on this research, especially on the laboratory and field scale. One thing, here in the past few years with the volatility of economics and increasing fertilizer prices, we've seen a dramatic increase in interest in soil fertility, primarily in the ways that we can better predict nutrient management, nutrient uptake, and the ability of our crops to interact with the environment. Some of the things that are driving this are just basic input costs. Fuel is going up, fertilizer is going up. We also have technology costs that are adding to this. The flip side of it is there are several environmental issues that we have to start thinking about in terms of we need to better manage these systems in order to lower those potential environmental impacts. Soil testing technology. There are a lot of things out there that we've been using, but when you really sit down and think about it, the advancements that were made in soil testing technology were made 40, 50, 60 years ago. And since then, there's been no real leap to the next level in terms of how do we predict nutrient availability and how do we use it to recommend fertilizers. Out there right now, there are several different proposed methodologies that have potential. The idea is, how do we take these proposed methodologies to the next level and make them useful and make them able to incorporate in a production setting that not only profits the farmer, but helps prevent that environmental impact? One of these that I'd like to discuss today is alkaline hydrolyzable nitrogen. Currently, there are two tests that have been identified that measure potentially mineralizable N. Simply what this is a alkaline hydrolysis method. The most commonly known one is the Illinois soil nitrogen test. It has been identified as measuring glucosamine primarily from bacterial cell walls. It also measures exchangeable ammonium in the soil. Another one is direct steam distillation, which is a little bit harsher conditions of hydrolysis. It measures exchangeable ammonium, a portion of amino acids, and then also glucosamine in the soil. The tests that have originally surfaced around these two methods have looked at traditional soil sampling depths of 10 to 15 centimeters. And I bring up an interesting quote from soil testing that says, "A soil recommendation can never be any more accurate than the accuracy of the soil sample," which leads us into thinking, soil sampling depth, okay? When you're developing a new soil test method, how deep should you sample the soil? Which leads us to another question. Why do we traditionally sample the soil 10 to 15 centimeters deep? Okay, I've been in soil science since I started my college career. I honestly at first could not answer that question. Why do we use those depths? And there's a number of reasons, but traditionally back in the beginning, you know, it was easiest. Let's pick the shallowest depth that gives us the best correlation, the easiest route. Another one is the plow layer, the restrictive layer of the soil. And what this all really goes back to is the mobility or the immobility of the nutrients that you're trying to quantify. Okay, if you're looking at something like P and K that you might consider is relatively immobile in the soil, you're only going to look at that plow layer, the layer where you're going to apply the nutrient and mix it up over the course of the season. With tests such as nitrogen and sulfur that are a little bit more mobile in the soil, you're going to look at deeper depths. That's a lot of the reason why pre-side dress nitrate tests examine a much wider range of the soil in terms of the depth. They may be from 0 to 30, 0 to 60 centimeters, because there's a much more mobility in that particular nutrient that you're interested in. Previous work with the ISNT has been very limited in terms of how they tried to take this laboratory method and apply it in the field. And so what a lot of researchers have done is simply use the protocols and use the soil sampling procedures that were already in place. But the question becomes, what were those soil sampling procedures in place for? And most often they were in place for phosphorus and potassium. So the idea was that they took the soil sample depths that they had traditionally been taking and then took this new laboratory method and tried to mesh them together and see what types of results came out of it. One thing that this is a little bit of a sidetrack, but when we think about many of our popular crops, cereal crops in the United States, three that I've listed here are corn, rice, and wheat. And if you just think about some of the reporting rooting depths that we've seen for these crops, they can range anywhere from 30 to 200 centimeters. And this all goes back to primarily soil conditions. Soil conditions which are going to influence the root growth are going to be water availability, bulk density, and the nutrient availability. So in many different cases, we can have a wide range of rooting depths for a particular crop based on the soil type, soil texture of where that crop is being grown. So one question is, does depth influence alkaline hydrolyzable nitrogen? And what we've seen with some of the work that we've been doing, and primarily the types of compounds we're measuring with these two tests, is that previous crop is very important in terms of this particular measure of potentially mineralizable nitrogen. One reason for that is the types of biomass, the types of plant material you're putting back into the soil on an annual basis can be very important to this predictive ability of this test. Tillage is important. Climate is also very important in terms of just basic nitrogen mineralization rates. Also organic matter and soil texture. This is a personal communication when we started talking about the depth issue. And one thing that this particular scientist pointed out from his work in microbial transformations of nitrogen was that nitrogen mineralization with depth is influenced more by substrate availability rather than the mineralization rate. And so his work had pointed out that it's 60 and 120 centimeters, mineralization rate was not influenced by the microbes present. It was whether or not the substrate was there to become mineralized into ammonium. So it really becomes a mobility of the types of compounds you're measuring. As far as objectives, we wanted to quantify the soil nitrogen from 0 to 60 centimeters and evaluate the role of alkaline hydrolyzable nitrogen soil test. To do this, we quantified alkaline hydrolyzable and total nitrogen in 15 centimeter increments to 60 centimeters, and we compared the recovery of total nitrogen as alkaline hydrolyzable nitrogen across depths and sites. Simple methodology, we used 16 agricultural sites across the state of Arkansas from the primary producing regions. They all had a silt loam texture. They were sampled in March and April of either 2007 or 2008. The previous crops that were represented and dominate our production systems are first fallow, or soybean, fallow, rice, and then there were some sites catfish was included. So when we start to think about a typical soil profile for this type of test, what would it look like? And as you can see here on the x-axis, I have alkaline hydrolyzable nitrogen in milligrams of N per kilogram of soil, and the y-axis is simply soil depth. We have our two measures here of the ISNT and the DSD that are quantifying this amount. And this just generally kind of represents what we would expect a typical site to look like. Your highest value is in the top 15 centimeters of the profile, and then it decreases with depth. One of the major things that people have looked at with a soil test is a simple Kate-Nelson application where you identify a critical level and then you determine whether or not the test is able to predict the responsiveness of a site. From this, one thing that's brought up is a type A failure, where a soil test is above a critical level, but we still see a response to nitrogen fertilizer. What I do is I want to bring up a site here that would be typical of what we might expect for a type A failure. If alkaline hydrolyzable nitrogen with depth is influencing the nitrogen status and uptake of that crop. The reason I say that is in this particular case, the soil test level is high in the 0 to 15 centimeters, but somewhat low in the rest of the depths. So if depth was influencing the uptake and use of nitrogen for this particular soil test, this would be an important site where you say, maybe depth needs to be looked at and considered a little more closely in determining the predictability of the soil test. On the other hand, I have another example, which is the exact opposite, a type B failure. And the idea behind a type B failure is that the soil test is below a critical level, but you still see no response to nitrogen fertilizer. In this situation, the 0 to 15 centimeter increment would represent a low soil test value, but when you go out and apply your nitrogen fertilizers, you still see no response to that application. So in this particular situation, you probably have a significant contribution of nitrogen from depths below 0 to 15 centimeters in the soil profile, which could potentially influence how your crop is responding to that nitrogen fertilizer application. The major problem that has been addressed with alkaline hydrolyzable nitrogen is its correlation and relationship with total nitrogen. This is just a simple graph from some of the data that we've analyzed in Arkansas. We have total nitrogen on the x-axis in milligrams of N per kilogram of soil. And then we have alkaline hydrolyzable nitrogen as DSD on the y-axis. And from this, we see a good relationship, a good correlation. But if you look at the variability, for a total N value of 600 milligrams of N per kilogram soil, we have 100 range in our alkaline hydrolyzable nitrogen value. So even though there's a good relationship statistically, there's a lot of variability out there that's not being accounted for. One other thing is just recovery of total N as alkaline hydrolyzable nitrogen. One thing we see here is a huge range in the recovery, not only based on the total N value, which this is the highest, and then this is the lowest, but we also see a pretty significant difference in the two soil tests that we're using, especially between the ISNT and the DSD. Lastly, in conclusion, I think it's important that when we're beginning to look at the correlation and calibration of a soil test, that we take into account what types of nutrients we're wanting to identify and utilize before we go into that correlation and calibration step. Another thing is that alkaline hydrolyzable is not a constant fraction of total N, that the two soil tests measure different amounts of total N. And I think we should potentially revisit some of these tests and try to work in a little bit different manner when we try to apply them to our particular production setting. And then lastly, thank the people who helped funding the project. And I'll take any questions if you have any.
Trent, and the with the alkaline hydrolyzable nitrogen soil concentrations, the soil depth is obviously basically what you're looking at there, a significant component of that. How is that going to differ among soils, you think, say soil texture?
Okay, so the question is basically when we compare like a silt loam to a clay soil texture, how would depth influence your changes in alkaline hydrolyzable N concentration? And from that, it really kind of boils down back to your inputs and your management practices. We have sampled several different clays, and what we find with the clay soils is there's much less variability or much less change in concentration with depth. So you see a much more straight type line with depth. There's very little fluctuation as you go down. Another thing that we find is alkaline hydrolyzable N values for clay are almost twice what they are for silt loam soils. And that goes back to the issue of more nitrogen, fixed ammonium, and issues like that.
Quickly.
NSTAR, what is our... compare our R-squared with alkaline hydrolyzable then to fertilizer required to total nitrogen to fertilizer required. What's the difference in R-squared?
When we use alkaline hydrolyzable nitrogen to predict the fertilizer rates for rice, the R-squared value is about 0.89. When we use total N to predict those same fertilizer rates, it's 0.53. So the predictive capabilities of alkaline hydrolyzable N are significantly higher than total N as a measure of the same fertilizer rate calibration.
That's all I That's all the time we have for this presentation. Join me in thanking